It's now widely accepted that emotions play a big part in decision making. Understanding how emotions work within the decision making process has become important to marketers. Behavioral economists recognize two levels of thinking when it comes to decision making. First level of thinking is called System 1. It's fast, automatic, and arises out of the subconscious. It's a natural reaction to dealing with a situation. Humans are programmed to respond quickly and automatically for safety. If we were in the jungle and saw a tiger in front of us, we wouldn't spend time analysing the situation, we'd react immediately. Whether or not it is the right thing to do, we will most probably run. System 1 thinking isn't confined just to decisions related to safety. System 1 thinking is driven by emotions. The problem with System 1 thinking is that people often do not recognize that they are thinking. The process occurs in the subconscious, and so it's difficult to unpick and describe. Even if we are prepared to admit that the choice of a product is driven by emotions, we may find it difficult to say exactly what those emotions are and how they are working. System 2 thinking is easier to analyze. It's the slow, calculating, conscious, and logical way in which decisions are made. People find it easier to recognize and describe them. System 2 thinking is how most of us think when we make decisions, when in fact we could be in a post-rationalization that follows the true driver, which was emotions. Our System 1 thinking and the actions we take are influenced by biases. These are also referred to as heuristics. What happens in the past will almost certainly shape what we think and our actions in the future. There are a number of factors that influence the biases. The first is anchoring. Reference points help us in our decision making. If we mention a fact or a figure to someone, it could influence their answer. For example, if we say to people, "How likely are you to buy this product at a price of more than $100? We've introduced the idea that the product could be worth $100. We may get a much higher proportion of people saying they're likely to buy it at a price of more than $100 if we were simply to say, "At what price would you buy this product?" The $100 is the anchor. Another of the biases is availability. We're influenced by the things we can quickly and easily recall. Something that's happened recently or something of critical importance will be readily available in our minds and could bias our response. Asking somebody how happy they are with a supplier immediately after they've suffered a problem with that supplier is likely to get a strong negative reaction, possibly a harsher reaction than is justified. Another bias comes from optimism and loss aversion. There's an old saying that in business that everything costs more than you thought and takes longer than you thought. This is because of the prevalence of overstating and overestimating the benefits and underestimating the costs. It results in us sometimes taking on projects that are risky and against our better judgment. And then there's the bias of framing. The way a question is asked can materially affect the answer. For example, people could be told that the survival rate of a surgical operation is 90%, or they could be told that the mortality rate is 10%. Both figures are correct, but people are more likely to happily agree to the operation if they're told that there will be a 90% success rate. And then there is the bias of sunk cost. We're guilty of throwing good money after bad. We make decisions that have a poor outcome, and yet we're drawn to continue down the same path, perhaps to try and change the outcome and alleviate any feelings of regret. Let's have a look at the model in action. Market researchers have been guilty in the past of assuming that most decisions have some rationality. In part, this has been guided by traditional economics, where it's assumed that the rational buyer weighs value and price when making a decision. Certainly some element of rationality is involved in most decisions. People are fairly rational about how much they can afford to spend on a product, and they choose within a price range. Within that price range, they may be heavily influenced by emotional factors. Simple products such as lipsticks, foodstuffs, and items of clothing are chosen quickly. Someone walking around a supermarket usually gives no more than a few seconds thought as to what they throw in the basket. There's a lot of System 1 thinking here. So too, when we want to measure brand awareness, we rely on System 1 thinking. It is the brands that people mention spontaneously and without a great deal of thought that are usually the strongest. We also know that people forget to mention things, and so we prompt them by reading out a list of brands and ask which they know. Here we're tapping into the proactive thought, the System 2 thinking. There are other things that demand more thought and where decision making is extended. Take, for example, the choice of a civil engineer to build a major bridge. It may take months of negotiations and procrastinations with a number of civil engineering companies before one is chosen. There will be many people involved and less room for intuitive decision making. This is not to say that factors such as the brand of the civil engineer will be unimportant. However, if there is a choice between two civil engineers, there will be a good deal of rational scoping until the offers from each look reasonably similar. Now, at that point, the brand of a civil engineer could swing the balance in favour of one of the companies. When there's nothing else to choose between two companies on rational factors, the emotional factors do become important. System 2 thinking is required to generate ideas. If we ask people what improvements can be made to a product or service, an initial reaction may be, nothing, it's fine. System 2 thinking involves effort, and people must be pushed to think harder. We could use gamification and say, you've 20 seconds to mention as many new applications for the product as possible. In this way, we would be forcing the respondent to make an effort and think in a System 2 way. Kahneman, the person who invented or thought about System 1 and System 2 thinking, tells us that when people find it difficult to answer a question, they may substitute their own ideas. For example, if someone is asked how their car can be improved, they may answer by saying they can't think of any improvements and it's the lazy System 2 option. Or they like their car because it does lots of miles to the gallon, which is like a substitution of the answer. The person who talks about being happy with the car's fuel efficiency hasn't answered the question. Rather, they've substituted an answer for another question. This means that when we have to get answers to difficult and complex questions, we should break the question into a number of parts. For example, we shouldn't ask what improvements should be made to the car. We should ask the car owner what improvements could be made to the comfort of the car. What improvements could be made to the electronics within the car? What improvements could be made to the servicing of the car and so on? So here are some things to think about with System 1 and System 2 thinking. Use focus groups and qualitative research to discover what people really think of their products and those of your competitors. Create an emotional profile which shows how your brand is associated with certain words, such as happy, pleased, trust, valued, safe, and so on, versus stressed, frustrated, irritated, disappointed, unsatisfied, and so on. What is the emotional profile of your competitors using the same words? Use emotions to make your marketing communications more effective. Instead of talking about the features of your products, talk about how the customer will feel after they've bought the product.